Well, shall we get into it?
Yeah, sure.
Hello and salutations. This is Caleb, your host, the one, the only. But I have a special occasion. This is a special episode of Caffeinated Connections. I'm joined here by the Liam Sullivan.
Hello.
Well, what did we just get done doing? We were in the studio for, what, a few hours?
Yeah, a couple hours.
Doing what?
So we started off with a little portrait session, and I got some updated headshots, which was very kind of you. And then we did some videography work for...
It was like exercises to really finish off the year and finish those projects a little bit last minute. But, you know, we all have things that we got to do and might as well just get them done. But Liam, introduce yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to give it the old college try. Yeah. So my name is Liam Sullivan. I am a junior at Pitt I don't want to say up the street.
Up the Ave?
All right. Up the Ave, yeah, up Forbes. And yeah, I'm a computer science major, but I've been working for the Pitt News ever since my sophomore year. And, you know, it's been great to be shooting photojournalism. Part of the reason I know Caleb is because we met at a concert. We both had our cameras out and we were both shooting. I forgot. What was the concert that we met at?
It was like this, grunge house concert that I swear we could have broken that the basement ceiling in that case, that the floor could have collapsed. It was like...
Oh, was it Black Lodge?
It was Black Lodge.
It was Black Lodge.
Because I remember everyone was like, the whole house is going to cave in now.
Right.
And like people would leave and come back. But it was like a literal mosh pit. And I'm sitting there. I have a video with my camera and it's just going everywhere. And I still managed to grab a few shots. And I mean, it's so different from Haven. I mean, you know, the recent episode with Dream the Heavy came out and it was just a blast to talk with them. And but yeah, you and I, we've photographed the concerts for what? I mean, I got back into it, but like what drove you? I mean, it was really interesting. How did you end up meeting me? What drove you to go to that concert?
So that's an interesting question. When I was in freshman year, I struggled to find places to go on the weekends just because, like, you know, when you're 18, 19 years old, you can't really go to bars, you know, unless you're like well-connected, it's hard to find parties and all that jazz. So something that I did is I would go out with my friends and we would look for concert venues.
Just like a tomcat, just kind of figuring it out.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we stumbled upon this place called Local House, which was an outdoor venue type of place. Basically, like, you would have three bands, each of them would play a set, and it was like this backyard in South Oakland, pretty much. And so I met some people there, and then they said, hey, you know, there's this other place, Black Lodge, that you should go and check out. It's just like one small shoebox of a room where, you know, the players are just sitting in the kitchen and, you know, blasting into this room. And yeah, so I went over there and I took some photos because, you know, that's what I do. That's what I've been doing since middle school. And I met you there and the rest is history.
That's really insane because, like, the only reason I went to that is because, you know, I used to work for the Globe and there was like, oh, yeah, there's, you know, a concert happening out there. And I went and figured it out and found out and reached out and I was like, this is cool. I'm going to figure this out. And I never ended up doing a story on it, but I mean, I had more fun doing the photos. And I think it's just, you know, you develop that connection and like we get busy with life. But like, I think there's always that connection that, you know, you foster and it's like, oh my God, you get picked right back up where you left off, especially in not even just the music world of Pittsburgh, just, you know, in Pittsburgh, when you start to meet those familiar faces, it's like, you're not going to stop seeing them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, Pittsburgh is debatably one of the best cities for that, right? Like, you know, it's the big city, small town feel that everyone talks about, where, you know, like you'll meet someone in one place and see them in another and make that connection. And it's just, it's wild. Like, I feel like it's so easy to re-encounter people in this city in spite of how big it is. And it's a specifically like a Pittsburgh thing, you know?
Like, you'll just see someone like you just saw yesterday and it's like, I didn't know you were going to be here.
Yeah, yeah. Like someone that you encountered on the street and had like a brief little interaction with, you see them again at like a house show and you're just like, oh, it's you.
Yeah, there's these part, you know, it's, you will always end up seeing another person around Pittsburgh if they're at least familiar or near the area. So it's like, always treat people. I'm very courteous and like, always be kind to others, especially because you never know who you're going to run into again.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. Because like, you can't just assume that you're never going to see that person again, you know? So like, you kind of have to be on your best behavior at all times.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially
like
being
your cashier might end up, you know, being like some guy that you find at like a Pirates game, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. You meant it was something similar to that. So I used to work for a Steelers, like an event stuff for that, the tailgate.
Okay.
And so I was like doing photojournalism and I end up going to this Trump rally. And what's really crazy about it is, so the company I worked for, I think like the daughter or something, her father was the guy we interviewed at the Trump rally.
Oh.
And it was like, holy crap, small world.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. But after I went and did that, I went back to work and I covered the event. And they're like, wait a minute, you look familiar. And I'm like, oh my gosh. It was like such a small world. So I'm glad I didn't say anything wrong.
Yeah.
But it's like,
feel?
It was like, oh my God. And and like, you start to realize, like, you know, it's such a small world that you don't expect to meet people or like, you know, familiar faces, but it's like, oh my gosh. I didn't realize that that's a lot of the, you know, some of the people that I worked with were supportive of them. And I'm just a journalist. I'm trying to be as unbiased as I can. And it's like, oh, wow. And like, I'm glad I didn't say anything wrong, but it's like that was like the biggest, like, oh my gosh.
Right.
Because you know, you don't think about that when you're going out and like you're working a different job where, you know, you meet these familiar faces that go to these tailgates, but you don't realize that, you know, they have other things that they do. And you're like, but how did you know that this is going to have, like, it's like, and it only occurred to me until after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, as a journalist, you try to be as unbiased as possible. And yet you also have a life, and like, you kind of just have to try your hardest. But like, after a certain point, it's just like, you know, I'm a human being and like, I have feelings too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's trying to like still be genuine and truthful, and like, I have a love for honesty and telling the truth and being real. But there's also that same sense of like, because everything that I do and put out is going to definitely be judged, because I am also a photojournalist, to where I will document things, but it's also our biases are going to affect other people by other people's biases,
right?
To where these biases that we have, if we're at all, you know, an effective changer, you know, someone to change and innovate, these biases other people can have against us, and that can manipulate so many different things.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's scary, because it's when, like, we're allowed to have our opinions, but it's like, do you ever feel the need to hold back your opinion?
depends on the context. Do you mean like in the context of politics? I feel like that's what's most
I mean that is one
of
the
of
that,
now,
that
right?
is very much culturally relevant when it's like, you know, just to make everyone else happy, you know, you just kind of, you know, close your mouth and bite your tongue, you know. And it's like, you know, you don't want to cause a situation, but it's like, you know, deep down it's like, God damn it.
Right.
And I can say that I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you, I think very much our generation does, where it's like being able to speak out and be open and, you know, being a voice of change and reason and understanding. And then you encounter people in our lives or even family that don't meet us halfway or even quarter the way.
Yeah.
How do you figure that out? How do you go about that dynamic?
I think that for me personally, I've been very lucky when it comes to my political engagements. I think that, you know, being in Pittsburgh, this area is very progressive. And, you know, my family back home in Virginia is also like very, very progressive. They're all like very forward thinking when it comes to, you know, like accepting people of all different races and nationalities and, you know, queer people. And I think like I've gotten incredibly lucky there. I can give you an anecdote, though. I went to cover during the 2024 election, the Dave McCormick watch party downtown. I covered it for the Pitt News. I was with my writer. I don't want to disclose her name here, but she was pretty flustered through the entire thing because, you know, some of the talking points that people were spouting were, you know, quite misogynist. And yeah, I was there, and it was weird because like she would be, you know, stopping random people at this party, right? And it was like an invite only thing. So like a lot of these people were like high profile individuals in the McCormick campaign. And yeah, they would say like the craziest stuff. And then, you know, she would be like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then she would like keep asking follow-up questions. And she would go back to me like after the interview was over and be like, what the fuck? You know, like,
oh, yeah, that reminds me so much.
Sorry, am I allowed to curse?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
the propane. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad that you said it. It's. I mean, I think that everyone can use profanity in their own right. And as long as you don't overuse it, there's a reasoning, there's an accentuation of it.
Okay, I just had to make sure.
Oh, yeah, you're good. You remind me of, like, the Trump rally and, like, going and interacting with these individuals to where, like, you're going in and it feels so enclosed. It's like walking in a new elevator and you can't breathe.
It's like claustrophobic.
It is truly claustrophobic. As someone with claustrophobia, it is an interesting, you're outside, but you still feel like you're in a walled place.
Wait, so you're saying that you're claustrophobic and you went to Black Lodge as one of your first shows?
Okay, we don't talk about that. That was just,
dude,
it was undiagnosed.
What are you doing?
I mean, I managed. I cope with it by taking photos. If I have my camera, I'm fine. Or at least I tell myself I am.
Okay. That's an interesting hobby. That's an interesting way of processing that. I'm not going to say it's wrong. It's just surprising.
Yeah, if I have my camera on my neck, I can usually do most things that I normally wouldn't do without it. Or I couldn't. I would normally not be able to do that thing if I didn't have that around my neck. Just the idea of having the camera is this protection. And it's like that coping mechanism that way it's like I turn invisible.
Fascinating.
And like going into that Trump rally and going in and like being like, I might get stopped. And I just flashed my press badge and they just kind of like, oh, yeah, come on through. I'm just like, it was just that easy. They don't care. They're just, if you have confidence, most of the time, they're not going to care. It's like,
that's
cool.
So true.
It is so strange. And I was like that, there's that moment where I sat there after I got through security. I was like, there's no way I did that. And I looked like that double take where it's like, holy shit, what else can I do?
You have to pretend that you're more important than you are.
Yes. And there's that like weight of everything else where it's like, holy shit, I just did something really cool. And then you just look, it's like you look behind you of how far you've come, and you look ahead and you're like, oh God, I have more I have to do. And there's a hesitancy that comes with it. And there's that weight that when you realize it, and you kind of have it in the back of your head, I'm sure you've experienced it whenever you're covering politics or anything along the lines of that for the news.
Oh, yeah.
There's like that weight of responsibility of, I have to do this right, or at least right to your own standards. And it's like,
yeah,
I can't fuck up.
Right. Yeah. Like, you're surrounded by AP news reps and CNN and MSNBC and all of these adults in the room. Right. And you're just like a college student with a camera and, you know,
with a hope and a dream.
Maybe like, best case, your gear, it sums up to $3,000, you know, like,
and
the stuff that they're using is like, you know, probably worth like 10-15K, and you're like, wow, like, these people are just throwing around money like it's nothing.
It's not even that. I mean, I think it's less about the gear and it's more about the people that I meet, and like that, it's like, holy crap, these people have to have it all together. And I've had conversations with Fox News. I actually talked with Fox, one of the Fox camera guys that does stuff for ABC News as well.
Right, yeah.
And they take, you know, work here and there, and it's not just specific camera guys, but I was walking and talking with them, and I said, you know, there's this person that doesn't really care about, you know, he's a political correspondent, and he hasn't even gone out and done anything. And they're like, well, what are you? I'm like, well, I'm just a photojournalist. They're like, well, you're more of that than he is. And it's this idea that, you know, when you get up, show up, show out and showcase your work and who you are, it's like they recognize that. And I ended up building a bond with ABC News of all, you know, the ABC News camera guy. And he, you know, I still text him here and there. And it's like, he's like, how you doing? And he'd get pictures of me doing stuff. And it was such a cool dynamic where like they'd start to say hi to me. And like, they're like, we were trying to get your attention.
But, yeah.
And it was, and if it wasn't for ABC News, and the audio tech guy for ABC or what it was, if it wasn't for them, we would have passed out at the Trump rally because we were standing there for 8-9 hours. And there were four people passed out, to where I actually asked a woman that was on a gurney passing by, was it because of dehydration? And she's like, yep. And it's like, oh God, this is scary. Because it's like when you see the sea of people behind you and it's you're sitting here internal, like, I'm like, this is as far as I've come. And you're looking at the sea of people that is like, it is just, there's a lot of people. So like, to go and get food or anything to drink, there's no way you're getting back. So you just had to like hunker down and literally just stick it out. And it was gruesome. Like, yeah. Not gruesome in a way that is visceral visually, but it's like, you have to sit there. You can't turn the television off. You can't turn the volume down. You can't just make it go away.
You can't detach yourself.
Oh, if anything, you're more attached. And you become this... It's such a weird thing where you almost close up and you're like, But you can't. When you're a photojournalist or you're a journalist, you can't...
Because it's your responsibility to capture the news as it is.
Exactly. And it's... There's so much fear in that, but it's also like... With fear comes confidence and courage and all these other things that go into play, to where, you know, we ended up getting kicked out because they warned me like 10 times for my camera. 10 times.
For your camera.
Like, that I had a DSLR. They warned me 10 times that I had a DSLR, like an actual camera.
Right.
And he's like, well, you're not certified or anything. And I didn't have that badge thing. And I get that, but like, they let me through and they warned me once, twice, three times, four times, five times. If they had a problem with me and Secret Service had a problem with me, I'd be gone.
Right.
And I had Secret Service walk past me 4 or 5 times. I was no issue.
Okay.
So it's like, I don't know. We got, I got the photos of Trump and
right.
I got the photos and they escorted us out real quietly. And while we were getting escorted out, they were like, You're fake news. And
was the problem that you weren't part of an alternative publication?
Essentially, yeah. We weren't like an accredited publication media that was there to cover that and actually publish. not one college journalist was there that I know of.
You weren't vetted.
We weren't essentially vetted, even though I have been vetted and I can count and say we were vetted to go to J.D. Vance's rally out in Johnstown.
Okay.
Even though like 50 people showed up, most people were like old.
Okay, sure.
And it was such a strange display of patriotism, or shall we say nationalism.
Right.
It was, but like we were accredited with them. And, you know, they just didn't, there were people getting like passes to go into the Trump Butler rally V2 day before. Like, I talked to this woman and she's like, yeah, my friend let me through and got me a press pass. And I'm like, but we were denied like twice and we still kind of fought against that. And we were, I think we were the only ones, the only college paper that published his photo. And we had, I mean, it was my photo. And yeah. It was, I mean, it's still a memory and it's going to, you know, stick true to my, you know, my career. Cause it's like, you know, it's like, at least I'm doing something right. And I got the photos and it's not like they took the SD card or anything. They probably weren't smart enough, to be honest.
Well, yeah. And also, I don't think it's worth their time to, right?
Yeah, they got,
like, you're just a college student to them.
Yeah, right? They don't. Yeah, they're like, oh, you think you're all liberal and you know something. And they were just, it's funny that, like, the way the management handled us and security handled us, but, like, other people that we interacted with, they were open. They were like, we love to see younger people in this and asking these questions. And they were, I don't think we had any issues.
No, that's okay. It's so funny you mentioned that because we got the exact same reaction at the Dave McCormick rally where, you know, like my writer would be like trying to like lead people on, right? And be like, oh, that's so interesting. Like, tell me more about the border crisis, you know, for example. And, they would always come back to, it's so cool to see young people engaged in politics.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, well, of course they are. It's just that usually they're not conservative, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's the polls have already showed. I mean, right now, what is he? He's 45% liked. I think they published like the numbers.
You said, like, Trump. You mean like approval rating?
Yeah, right? Approval rating. Right now, he's at like 45, which essentially the worst, like the second worst person that got anywhere near him was his last term.
Oh, okay.
And like, definitely check that. But it's, you know, this, the way people would react to us, it's like, yeah, no, it's like they would not get mad at us at all. They were like, this is awesome. And it's just like, deep burrowed in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, if they knew that we just kind of got in here and just kind of started just asking questions. When you run with confidence, they are supportive as hell.
Again, it's pretending to be important.
No, we were literally told by, I forget the woman, don't know her name, but she was like, if you just scream three letters in a crowd, ABD4 or ABDC, they will literally split like the sea.
Really?
If you shout three letters out loud, like I was saying, like press, it's crazy what you can, like, the
just
power
A B C four and you can
or,
just
a, or literally like CAB coming through, CAB coming through. They're not gonna care. They're gonna just separate like the sea. It is absurd how much power, like, when you realize that you can do that, it's like, oh my God, I have power. But it's like, with power comes responsibility.
There's no way it's that easy, though. Like, it has to be something that people know about, right?
No.
Like,
it is
ABC,
truly
NBC.
No, it is truly, you can say anything within reason, and they will just, it's, I mean,
you can't shout fire. Okay. In the crowd, but yeah. Like, yeah.
That is a very curious matter. Like, FIRE coming.
Yikes.
But it's strange. Like, I mean, given the fact I shouldn't have been able to get in as easily as I did, but I did. And I got the photos that I needed and I got out and they didn't let us back in, even though we weren't harming anyone. My writer wasn't allowed in, even though that she wasn't even taking photos. and they said that she doesn't have a right to document it.
Yeah, unfortunately, if it's their event, they get
it
to
was a, it was a private, essentially a private event. In that case, with the Butler Fairgrounds, I did look into that. Unfortunately,
but yeah, if it's private, then they get to control the flow of press, and you know that's unfortunate. But you know that's just how it works. I mean, now like in the White House, it's crazy. Like the press box is much, much smaller than it used to be.
Have you heard about the thing on the different sides, the people that they, like, give a job to ask the questions that are in favor of them?
I haven't heard that, but I've heard about the White House controlling the press box, which is unprecedented in and of itself.
Yeah, it's the concerning factor of, like, you know, AP can't cover them anymore because, or to my knowledge, because they're barred from that, you know, responsibility or that authority because they didn't.
Of course, because AP is biased, obviously.
Oh, yes, the most biased.
The most biased.
But it's, like, it's concerning because we're getting to a point in our, you know, world where it's scary because it's, you know, we're both journalists and like we want to be able to put out the right information and to have it properly fact checked and that due diligence done, but we're leaning towards this anti-intellectual world to where it's like it's so much easier to not know any better.
Yeah, no, ignorance is easier than ever now. I think, you know, it's fascinating because we live in a world where any information you could possibly want is available at your fingertips. We have 5G on our phones and we can, you know, download like 4K movies anywhere in America, pretty much, with the exception of some areas, right? And it's like, yet still people don't know how to properly educate themselves because they're just not willing.
We had, there's this idea that, you know, soap bottles, like shampoo bottles, right?
Yeah. Of course I do. What do you mean? What kind of question is that?
Have you read the back of them?
Maybe?
So you've never gotten bored and read the back of a shampoo bottle?
I mean, like, I read nutrition labels. I wouldn't say I've read a shampoo label before, but go on.
The point is that instructions exist for how to wash your hair on the back of shampoo bottles for a reason.
On every single shampoo bottle.
A majority of them have instructions how to wash your hair.
Do you know what agency requires this? Because I'm so curious.
I don't even think it's a requirement, but I just think it's like, what if they use it wrong? Like, you know, toaster end up in bathtub. Didn't follow the instructions.
There's no way.
But there is. There's instructions for shampoo. And the way I look at it is the context behind that, they had to put instructions because someone didn't follow them.
So you're telling me that video games don't have manuals anymore, yet shampoo bottles still have instructions on them?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
No, I am not kidding you.
This world is insane, dude. I can't believe. Oh, America.
We have less instructions on the meat that is processed and how to cook it than we do on shampoo and how to use it.
And also, like, with meat, there's debatably more risk there, right? I mean, like, I'd imagine it depends on the type of meat, but like, you know, for chicken, for example, right? Like, you have to cook that through because if you don't, then you're going to get salmonella, you know?
Oh, it's fine.
Like, if people are at the point where they don't understand how to wash their hair, how can you trust them to, like, figure out how to see if meat is raw, you know? Like, use a meat thermometer.
Most people don't even know what that is.
What a meat thermometer is.
I would say that I don't think most people use one. Or like maybe I'm underestimating the ability of others, but or at least with meat.
I use one.
That's good. I have a thermometer in my oven.
Okay.
I'm one of those that haven't gotten around to getting a meat thermometer, so I stick a knife in and hope for the best. But I also don't cook a lot of... I've survived long enough.
Well, you've survived. I think, like, it's not about survival. Like, you'll be fine. It's just gonna suck, you know?
I mean, I would like to say that when it comes to cooking meat, I am pretty good at cooking, although I still wash my hair and I don't need those instructions.
Okay, sure. But, like, it is nice to be able to know exactly when to take the heat off, you know? Like, especially if you're cooking chicken breast, like, you have to take it off, like, right when it gets to 165.
You know more about this than I do. Although, I don't cook chicken often. So, in hindsight, it's not... I will go now and further myself into this education and use a meat thermometer. I mean, I do cook it all the way through. I don't cook raw chicken.
Well, right, yeah. Like, the thing is, like, you're supposed to cook it, like, right up to that magic temperature... And then take it off right away, because if you cook it any more, then it gets all dry. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, you can cook it until it's white all the way through, but you probably overcooked it at that point.
Well, that explains for some of my issues.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, in hindsight, or not even hindsight, I will admit I'm lazy when it comes to sometimes cooking. I mean, I'm a college student, let's be real. I'm more focused on the photos that I take than if I'm using a meat thermometer or not.
Yeah.
Which, I guess there's some leeway, you know, a good and bad dare. I mean, at least I'm making good money with the photos.
Right.
It's not like I'm a cook. Well, I cook for others.
Making good money might be stretching it, but you are making money.
But, like, going back to the idea, we have instructions not just on shampoo. We have instructions that our cars come with that I don't think many people have. Do you know your car manual? You know, like the car manual?
Yeah.
I don't think most people open that up. Like, let's be real. Like, more people are probably going to not follow the directions for their car than shampoo, I'd hope. I don't know if I want to hedge my bets on that.
Well, it's about the length and the density of the reed. If you're looking at instructions on the back of a shampoo bottle, that'll take you max, like, 20 seconds to read through. Reading through a car manual is a lot more dense and complicated. And I think a lot of people have the cognitive familiarity of what driving a car is like, you know? Like, there are enough standards in place that you can, you know, start driving a Prius, and you probably know how to drive anything that isn't a stick shift.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. My only concern is those that don't know how to put on their turn signal.
There are a few of those, yeah.
Especially in Pittsburgh, I'm sure we've all come across them.
Maybe not in Pittsburgh, but, you know, I've seen them in the South.
Yeah, the turn signal, non-existent. But, I mean, the point that I'm trying to make here is that if we have instructions on shampoo bottles, what do we need instructions on as to, you know, we have to be afraid that someone's going to buy shampoo and use it to cook with? What do we have no instructions for that we should, if they'd even be read? Like, you know, that's another completely, you know, visual instructions. Because actually, as a matter of fact, I read the shampoo bottle instructions recently, and they are visual.
Oh, you did?
They, wow. Yes, they're visual, at least on Old Spice. They're visual.
So you've got your little IKEA instructions on the back of your...
No, literally, it's a hand that shows you how to scrub and where to scrub, and it's like a small little, it's like a guide, so if you can't read, you can see.
Okay. But, like, do they just, like, what's the hairstyle in the photo?
I never looked at it. I think it's actually a guy.
It's a guy.
Yeah, okay. It's a guy.
Well, you'd imagine they would tailor it based off of like what gender the shampoo is marketed for, right?
I wonder if on women's shampoo or like women's body wash, it shows a woman or
probably
someone more feminine. That's an interesting perspective, like in terms of a marketing aspect, like even like if there's like a non-binary body wash where it's just a person, you know, not feminine, not masculine, just a person. I actually didn't really think about it like that, but that's a good point. It's just concerning, you know. I thought of it like a few days ago and I was like, this is just unfortunate that we have to put instructions on shampoo. And it's like, what? I mean, I don't know if you had issue with your high school, but with my high school, like, I asked way too many questions. Maybe too many, but I mean, there's never too many questions to ask, but it's like, at a certain point, they couldn't answer my questions, to where I often had to like look up and find that information myself.
I don't think there's such a thing as too many questions. I think it's about asking the right questions. I think as long as you're asking the right questions, there isn't any such thing as asking too many. I think it's more like, is this something that you could reasonably suss out on your own or not, right?
I mean, when it comes to, I mean, I think that quote, I'm going to use that if people tell me to stop talking and ask questions, because that's a wonderful quote, and I thank you for that. There's never too many questions. It's going to put it on a shirt and everything. We're going to have merch, you know, everything. But like,
nice.
It's, I mean, I agree that there are, it's the right question to ask. But I mean, obviously, when I was younger, I was a little bit more naive and curious. I mean, just as curious. But it's like, right. You know, when, I mean, I was not a liberal my whole life. I was a conservative.
Yeah. I think like a lot of political leanings have a lot to do with how you were raised and your upbringing. And I think that our upbringings influence us more than we'd like to admit.
It is like an RNG kind of thing.
It's kind of, yeah, it's based on your spawn point, right?
It really is. And it's like you get lucky or you don't get lucky and you still somehow fucking make it.
Or like your financial situation too. Like, you know, it's based on your spawn point. It's based off your parents, right? Or, you know, your familial wealth. Like that will determine like the course that is set for you in life. It doesn't mean that you can't break free from it. It just is really, really hard. And I think that like I kind of just lucked into the right policy positions because my parents were liberal and I learned a lot from them.
That's interesting because, like, I still am coming to terms with, like, how I've shifted to where it's, like, I've just become aware. And it, like, I don't know at what point it was between graduating high school and graduating college that I somehow shifted and looked at things differently.
Yeah. And I think, like, knowledge is power, right? Like, being a journalist forces you
to
really understand what's going on in the world.
And whenever there's like that belief or that thought of like, well, this is probably bad. It's like, well, why do I think that? And it's like that question, those questions start rolling even in ourselves to where it's like,
right,
we're asking ourselves when we encounter new information or even just we see something and it's like, what would be the best cause of action or documentation or whatever the case is? And it's like, you can't necessarily prepare any more than we already are. You can't over explain or estimate a situation. You just have to go into it and just be the authentic self.
Yeah, it's kind of your duty as a journalist to be able to look at things objectively. And sometimes you look at things objectively and it's hard to not come to certain conclusions, right?
Yeah, it kind of like be willing to foster that dialogue, but not completely tear it down.
foster that dialogue within yourself too, where, you know, you can examine your own cognitive dissonance and say, yeah, you know, like you know exactly what that feels like. Like you have like this preconceived notion of how the world works, and then, you know, some inconvenient truth will challenge it. And then you'll take a step back and be like, what? Like that shouldn't happen.
And then there's that like mind over heart.
Mind over soul?
Like there's like that mind, like there's that heart in things, that emotional feel, but then there's that mind thing where that cognitive dissonance happens, where
mind over body.
Mind over body, yes.
Yeah.
And it's that dissonance between the two where we have to come to terms and like realize it or don't realize it. And
yeah, there are people that never actually come to terms with these things. Like they'll keep rationalizing it, but like especially if your career is in telling truth as it is, it's hard to bury that lead forever. It's really hard.
Yeah, put something to rest. It, you know, not to like make it religious, but it's like the, you know, let the dead bury the dead. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that.
It's, you know, it's the idea of let those that are already on their way out worry about those that they're worrying about. Don't worry about them, because if they're, you know, on their way out, let the dead bury the dead. Let them take care of their things, and they're focused on the past, not the present or the future.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I'm probably not doing a good job at describing that, but...
No, that I understand that, yeah. Like, don't dredge up, like, old, I'm not sure exactly where I'm going with this. Like, I don't want to say old memories, like old feelings.
Yeah, it's kind of let people that are already on their way out of your life, or even just situations that are kind of
painful,
or even people that are painful. And we can't keep them in our life. We have to just let the dead bury the dead. Let them take care of their things, because we have to be alive. We can't focus on the dead all the time.
And yeah, that's so you have to move on.
It's essentially just saying move on, go do more, be better, be healthy in body and in mind.
Right.
And it's like that's just a personal philosophy, like, you know. And then I think we've actually been doing this for longer than 30 minutes, but
it's been quite a bit longer. But
yeah, but I let's definitely wind this down.
Yeah.
So one question I have for you is, what is your philosophy? How do you go about things? Like, what is your, like, conviction, or like, as all that you've learned from college and continue to learn, what is something that you've taken and it has informed a new perspective, or just how have you lived your life?
I think I've always led with curiosity for the world. I think that curiosity is a purely positive emotion. It's something where, you know, as soon as you stop being curious about how the world works and how it functions, you're stagnating, right? And so the best thing that you can do for yourself is to constantly be learning. And, you know, I'm a programmer. I'm a computer science major. And, you know, that's something that I really take to heart, where, you know, like, I always need to be learning a new language or a new framework or, you know, a new hobby. Like, photography was that learning outlet, the artistic learning outlet for me for a while, and still continues to be. But I've been learning quite a bit about, like, typography and graphic design and, you know, like, there's more information in the world than you can consume in one lifetime. But you want to get as close to understanding everything as you can.
It's you're not never, easy.
You're never gonna make it. Like, it's futile. Like, you're just never, you're simply never going to even get like a tenth of a percent of the information that's out there. But like, if you can get a hundredth, then like, that's remarkable.
Right. And then if you can contribute to the more information that's out there as well.
And like, help other people up with you, right? Like, lift other people up.
To where you're a part of that information and other people can take from that.
Yeah, well, and like, you don't even have to use the word take. Like, you know, just like, try and lift other people up to your level, you know? Where it's like, you know, other people can derive things from you and they can come to their own conclusions and they can possibly figure out things that you never even considered. You
and
know?
Then it can be a well-informed dialogue there as well.
It's a symbiotic relationship, basically, where like, you hope that other people can rise to your level and challenge you.
That is very refreshing to hear, because I wish I could hear that more, because it's very either Tao or Dao. I did a world religions class, and I think it's Taoism. You can choose to like live your own experience and kind of pursue this, like, your own personal thing. I forget what it's called, but it's like going and pursuing this like ultra somewhere something, and or you can help someone else achieve that as well. So you get to like, you know, take a like a little road over, and it's like, hey, I'm going to help you get to where you want to get to.
Right.
And it's such a, it's like a fostered growth or a brotherly growth, or even just a, you know, a friendly person or a companionship. And I think that we need to do that more, especially not even just as younger people, but as like younger professionals, because I think we get very lonely.
You're also putting less focus on the self, right? You know, like, we live in a world where, you know, everybody is self-centered, you know, like, social media is, you know, a really big driving force of that, where it's all about like me, and like, you know, like, what am I missing out on, and like, what could I be doing? And you know, I think if you're trying to teach other people, you're, you know, in essence, forced to put yourself in their shoes and understand their perspective, because that's how you teach effectively, right?
Yeah.
You have to really understand someone and where they're at to be able to bring them up to your level of understanding, assuming that, you know, like, you know something that they don't, and you know they're trying to learn a new skill or whatever, right? You can't, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. You know, like, you can't teach a man how to fish if he doesn't know what a fishing pole is.
You can give him a stick and a string.
Yeah, sure. But, like, you can't
expect him to fish if he doesn't know how to use the tool.
Exactly, yeah. It's one of those things where, like, you have to know where the other person is at to understand how to move forward. And that requires focusing on other people other than yourself. And I think that that's really important.
This world, I mean, you talk on that this world is a selfish world. And it's so hard to get out of that echo chamber of the selfishness.
I wouldn't say this world. I would say America in particular is very individualistic. And that can contribute to those feelings. But yeah, carry on.
And when it comes to this, you know, selfishness, when we look outside of ourselves and encourage others, but encourage ourselves to interact with new mind, you know, new dialogues, new things that may make us uncomfortable, you start to grow. And I mean, just by knowing you and talking to you on the, you know, here and there,
right?
I have learned so much about me and about you. And it's such a grateful thing that I can be grateful for. And I'm sure that I've helped something or I helped you with something or taught you something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like, literally today, I came in not knowing a single thing about video, and, you know, you opening up Premiere and, you know, shuffling things around, I was just like, wow, like, you know, I feel like even just passively watching that, I was like, okay, you know, like, I can sort of follow what he's doing, you know, like, he's splicing different clips together. And I think people definitely underrate that passive learning that comes from just, you know, like, watching a master at his craft.
I wouldn't call myself a master.
I, like, you know, I'm playing it up, but, like, I feel like it's important to be curious, because you can always find a way to learn no matter what. Obviously, it's good to find mentors, but if you can't find them, to just go on Google. Like, there, you can get so much out of a good Google search, or even, you know, now in the era of LLMs, like, you know, a good ChatGPT query, right? Although you have to be careful with what it spits out. But, you know, like,
when it comes to a Google search, I think that, or even just a Wikipedia search, you can do an entire loop. I mean, find a Wikipedia thing on, like, paradoxes. You can spend hours at that.
Right.
And it's, you know, the world is your oyster, but you don't have to pick them all up. You can be a little bit selective. Because, I mean, that's kind of, friends are like that, and people are like that. I mean,
not only can you be selective, you should be selective, because there's a lot of crap out there.
Yeah, a lot of expired oysters.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And
I like that analogy a lot.
Yeah, the expired oysters that you shouldn't, you know, the world is your oyster, but you got to be very selective.
I guess it's more of a metaphor.
Metaphor, analogy, what is it? It doesn't have to be. We're not in English class. I don't want to hear an English teacher barking up my tree. I'm going to be graduating tomorrow, so.
I mean, hey, look.
Or today, actually.
Today, well, yeah. It is past midnight, so.
Yeah, yeah, we're just in the studio at like 1 a.m.
1 in the morning, yep. Yeah, I mean, hey, look, man. I am part English major.
Oh, God.
Digital narrative and interactive design.
Oh.
My second major.
You're a double major?
Yes.
So you're both English competent in English, and you're also language competent in code.
In theory, yes.
In theory, yes. Interesting. That's definitely a conversation for later. But I did want to ask, how do you stay caffeinated?
Oh, God. Okay. This is so bad. I have a Celsius addiction.
Celsius. Like the water carbonated bleh drink?
The energy drink, yes.
Oh, it's an energy drink. I've never had it. I've heard a rumor and I've seen it everywhere. What does it do for you?
So it has 200 milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah, that's, do you tell me you drink one?
Yes. I can't do more than one. If I do two, I have done two before. I did last year around final season. Like last spring, and I felt like I was gonna die. Like, it felt like my heart was gonna pop out of my chest.
With no Adderall.
No Adderall. I've never taken Adderall in my life.
Thank
but
God.
Anyway, yeah, it's an energy drink. It has a bunch of caffeine in it. You know, two of them gets you to the FDA limit. It has taurine in it, which is something that's present in like Red Bull and Monster and a lot of other energy drinks. It's apparently good for your circulation, but I don't know how true those claims are. It also usually comes in like fruity flavors. And the way I would describe Celsius in particular is it's like a clean flavor. Like tastes very... like
Sprite-y?
I no, like, it just isn't very syrupy in the way that a lot of other soft drinks are.
So it's more like water based than it is syrup based.
It tastes like a seltzer, but they gave it more sugar.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've, like, after dropping like sugar stuff and like being overpowered by things, I've actually started like getting high C, it, like not high C, but like a juice that doesn't have fructose corn syrup, and
high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, high fructose corn syrup. Taking that, watering it down, that way I can consume it, not feel like my teeth are going to fall out.
Right.
So I mean, Celsius, I dropped, Monsters a while ago, and I think I had one today because I was like, I'm going to finish these finals and like get everything done. That way I can get out and go and do. So where are you off to after this? And when do you plan on coming back so we can have you on again?
So after this, I'm going home and going to bed because I'm old. I'm just kidding. I'm only 21.
You're younger than me.
I am younger than you, yeah.
I don't think you have room. You made me feel older.
I feel like an old man sometimes because, like...
You hear this kid.
I'm the kind of guy that goes home on a Saturday night and passes out at 10 p.m. and does not give any fucks about it. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I feel like an old man.
I feel like that's valid, because sometimes I've been called an old man since I was 16. I started dressing like one, I guess.
You know what? That might be it, because, like, I show up to campus every other day in my leather jacket, and I think it probably ages me by 5 years.
Mine, I have to find a new leather jacket, but no, it truly, like, it, there's... I mean, maybe it's just our old souls, but it's like, you know, sometimes I like being an old man and going to bed at 8 p.m., 10 p.m., and, you know, like, I'll have a little piece of toast and coffee and go to bed and be all happy.
Yeah. I'll stop at one beer. Crazy.
Whoa.
For a college student.
I've actually stopped at one beer. I had one beer, I think... I had two beers. Never mind. I stopped at two beers.
Two beers.
But it wasn't beer. It was
really breaking new grounds with that one.
Well, given the fact that I had it, it was an ale. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. But
pale ale?
No. It was like a apple something. I don't know what it was.
Apple beer, dude. What are you drinking?
It wasn't that bad. I don't think so. Maybe I was just really hungry and really desperate for something.
Hungry. You don't drink when you're hungry. That's not right. You're gonna feel like crap.
I was fine, sort of fine afterwards.
Okay.
It was fine. I just did a really bad golf game. Little putt-putt game.
Okay.
That's the only effects it has.
Cool. Coordination could be better, yeah.
That's the only caveat. The food was good after that, but yeah. Beer, not my thing. Not the biggest thing, but as long as you're staying caffeinated, that's a good thing. Well, within reason. Not the FDA limit. Don't go back.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, I'm well aware that my caffeine addiction could be tempered a little bit. And it's not that I dislike coffee. It's just that
he hates coffee.
No, I really don't. Like, you know, I do like me a good espresso shot. I think if I'm like hanging out with a couple friends in a coffee shop and I'm trying to chill, I'll get a cappuccino, you know? Like I don't think that the bitterness is like the problem. It's just that I like sugar too much. I like sugary things. And I can't wean off of it.
You should. It's so... I mean, you start to appreciate water.
Okay, Mr. Just Had a Gatorade, sure.
Okay, there's electrolytes.
That is not a good excuse. It has plenty of sugar. It's meant for people that are working out.
I'd like to say that shoot was a workout.
I mean, you were lifting some stuff, for sure. And, like, you were sweating it out, for sure. But, like, you're not, like, playing a sport.
I'd like to say photography's a sport for the cool people.
Okay. if it works for you, you can go along with it. It's not going to kill you, but I usually stick to zero calorie drinks nowadays because I just can't, like, I much prefer the artificial sweeteners, honestly. And, like, people give me flack for it, but I think, like, aspartame, sucralose, malitol, I think that's how you pronounce it. All these sugar substitutes, like, they're getting better, and...
Oh, aspartame is like, no.
Everyone says that aspartame is horrible and causes cancer, but the studies that came out that linked aspartame to cancer got debunked, so I don't know, man.
That's an interesting... I'm going to have to look that up. I'm going to have to figure that out. I hope everyone else at home and figures that out, too. I mean...
Yeah. No, like, we don't really know anything about artificial sweeteners, and that means that they could be totally fine and harmless, or they could be horrible. We don't know. We're thinking they're probably fine because we haven't found anything really bad yet.
Really bad, but it's bad.
But, like, it is artificial, so, you know, we don't know.
You know, like a little bit more plastic.
It's like, you know, you could drop acid and maybe be fine. Maybe. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the same vibe.
Yeah. So where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Liam Sullivan Photo. That's where I post my photography work, some of the work that I've done with the Pitt News, and also just some random portrait shoots that I have.
He's pretty good.
I would say I'm pretty good at portraits, yeah.
Need some more studio work, but...
Yeah, I wish. My studio equipment's back in Virginia, but I will be home in a couple weeks, so very excited for that. Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Liam Sullivan Photo. I'm also... If you want to look at my programming stuff, I'm on GitHub at Liam B. Sullava.
Might want to spell that out for everyone.
LIAMB, as in Benjamin. That is my middle name. Sullava, which is SULLIVA, no N. Yeah. That's where I post my post. I commit my code.
My commits.
I have a little Pokemon team builder that I made over last summer that I'm pretty proud of. I also have a couple of other little toy projects. I have like a calculator app on there. Another thing. I homebrewed my Switch and made a Switch app launcher. That was a really cool project. That one I'm also pretty proud of.
So you built the homebrew?
No. I built a home screen where you can, like, click on apps and you can launch them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're going to have to deep dive into that another time. But is anything else that you'd like to share with the class?
No, I feel like I've shared more than enough today.
Yep, we have learned enough. We have learned something that we can take and have a coffee with. Or, you know, go to bed. If it's late, go to bed. If you're awake, go do something.
Or go drink a Celsius, you know?
No. I guess go drink a Celsius if you like Celsius. I say stay with coffee. Or tea, you know, whatever floats your boat.
He's right.
But... take it easy, guys, and remember, stay caffeinated.